Hi, my name is David Reske, CEO of NowSpeed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Sarah Sabine. Sarah is an executive and leadership coach with clients in the US, UK, and Canada. She's also a popular speaker and has her own podcast. She lives between London and Malaga in Spain, and she was originally trained in tax accounting, which means she's undoubtedly smart and grounded in reality. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, David. I'm really happy to be here today. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, and do you miss tax accounting from your old days?
Hella no. No, I have to say, actually, in my younger years, I was fascinated by tax law and taxation. But let's just say I grew out of it, but it certainly gives you a good grounding in some of the things that you need to know from a business perspective. So certainly something I'm happy to have done.
Absolutely. And actually just spent time working on tax issues this week with my accountant. So it's when I say you're grounded in reality, I really mean that, because unless you really understand accounting and taxes, you're missing quite a bit. So that's good. But our conversation today won't be about taxes, as riveting as that could be. As you know, I like to start these conversations with a MythBuster question. And the question that you and I talked about is about staying on the right track. And the myth I want to explore with you is that if you're on the right track, then you'll have no doubts and be confident and just keep going. Is that true or not true?
So, I believe it's not true. I know this from myself as an entrepreneur. I know this from my clients. The people that achieve big things have big doubts along the way because they're consistently pushing themselves outside of their comfort zone. And sometimes you just don't know what's going to happen. What the true element of that is they just keep going. But they keep going despite any doubts they have and despite that lack of confidence. And I think I heard a quote that went something along the lines of, when you learn to accept pain, you become unstoppable. And the fact is, in the process of achieving big things, whatever those look like for you, we all have those dark nights of the soul. We all have those down periods and those challenges, and how we handle them is everything. So, you know, again, another image I like to use is when someone's digging for diamonds, they're going through this long tunnel, and literally you see in a cartoon image, they're just about to stop digging. But if they just dug a little bit further, on the other side is diamonds. So essentially what I'm trying to say is doubts are normal. Lack of confidence as you push your boundaries is normal. It doesn't mean that you're not on the right track.
So let's just unpack that a little bit. What is the role of doubt in a person's life? What's the benefit of doubt, or you know, how does doubt kind of play its part?
So I think doubt can be a test, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a test of how much we want something. And it can also be a test of ourselves. So the mere fact that you ask yourself questions about what you're doing, about why you're doing it, about whether you're being successful doing it, is actually a good thing. Because if you're asking yourself those questions, you're allowing yourself the space and opportunity to see growth opportunities that might be able to come out of it. So I actually think that imposter syndrome can be a good thing, as long as it's acknowledged and managed, because it means that A, you're expanding your comfort zone, and B, you are asking yourself valid questions along the way. And if you're not asking yourself those questions, I would almost say, why not? You know, because none of us knows everything. We will always come up against things that challenge us along the way. And those doubts are there quite often to show us something or to test our faith in some way.
Wow, some pretty powerful ideas there. Let's talk a little bit about asking questions. So how do you get to the point where you are asking yourself the right questions? Is this like a discipline that you should set up? Should I be asking myself questions every week? Should I be relying on other people to ask me questions? How do you get in that mode where you're challenging yourself with these questions instead of just plowing straight ahead and not, you know, kind of ignoring everything and going where you want to go?
So that's a really great question. The role of a coach, right, is to ask the questions that allow that person that is being coached to draw insights out of themselves. Now, obviously, you can have someone external that does that, but you can also self-coach yourself, right? So you can learn to ask yourself the kind of questions that will stimulate insights and therefore growth. Now, how often you do that, I don't like to say you must do it every day or you must do it every week, but as a regular practice, whether that's weekly or monthly, it's a good thing to do as a reflection exercise, because it stops you getting on a treadmill and just looking straight ahead and kind of not seeing the wood for the trees anymore, because you're regularly taking the time to assess what you're doing, assess what's working, assess what's not working so well. And it's very hard to do that when you're always on the go, go, go. In terms of what questions you ask yourself, I mean, the more you ask yourself questions, the easier it gets over time. But there are very good resources you can find online around the kind of self-coaching space that would come under the umbrella of reflection questions. And that would be like, I mean, to boil it down, what am I doing and why am I doing it?
Right.
Essentially. Yeah,
I've developed quite a practice in my own personal life about, you know, thinking about like the big ideas of where I want to go and thinking about core values and putting together plans and journaling and all that. And I've developed, you know, a lot of expertise, but I found that a lot of people don't do that. And so turning to a coach can be super helpful in kind of thinking through that. You're obviously a coach and you work with people doing that. How do you develop that trust relationship with people? And does it take a long time for people to accept you asking them questions about where they're going, developing those doubts perhaps in them with those questions, and then helping them gain clarity? Does that take time to earn that trust from people?
So I'm going to answer that in a few ways. Yes and no is the overview there. So I actually found for many years, and I remember other people observed this to me as well, that people that I just met would just come up to me and tell me things, right? And I was like, I have no idea what you're telling me, why you're telling me this, but you know, I'm glad that you've placed this trust in me to tell me this, even though I don't know you. So I think as a character, I'd like to believe I have the kind of character that helps people feel comfortable within my space to share. Now, there's other elements in that as well. Trust is more important than just that. It's also about, within a coaching relationship, chemistry. So do you resonate with me on a values level? When we have a conversation, does it feel like an open flowing conversation? This is obviously before we get into the coaching relationship stage, because if I feel at that stage that this person is going to be unable to open up to me and to enable me to ask some of the more difficult questions, then that's going to be problematic. And I think before getting into a coaching relationship, you know, the person who is considering being coached should do their due diligence as well. You know, is this person competent and trained and reliable? And is the chemistry there as well? Right? Because the chemistry is the kind of, let's call it the magic element there. And we all know that some people we get on better with than others.
So you've got to have that chemistry, that trust to really make it work and make it work long time. So let's say you establish that coaching relationship with somebody, you're working with someone, and you notice that these doubts are coming into their life. Maybe they're an entrepreneur, they're starting their company, they're getting off the ground. They're not getting the revenue traction they want. They're not getting the product acceptance. It's hard to build a product. They're running out of money. There's all these doubts, right? Entrepreneurs are a great example because it's easy to have doubts really in that environment. How do you decide when to listen to those doubts and make a change and, you know, pivot? It's a common business term today, pivot, kind of move into a different direction, or just keep going. Like, what are the, in your experience with people, like what, there is a, you know, sense of entrepreneurs that, you know, grit matters and going, and, you know, your illustration of the diamonds are just past the next rock. But how do you process those doubts and make those decisions about when to make changes?
So again, another great question. I want to say, like, the entrepreneurs that I tend to work most with within a coaching relationship are already pretty established entrepreneurs. So kind of multi-million dollar or pound revenue businesses, and these doubts still come up, right? So they exist at the beginning, they exist in the middle, they exist at the end. But coming back to your question, sometimes quitting is a good thing, sometimes pivoting is a good thing, and sometimes just carrying on is a good thing. The trick is knowing when to do each of those, right? And it comes down to the why. So is it coming from, and I'm very much boiling this down to the elements here, is it coming from fear or is it coming from love, right? So fear-based decisions, when we are in that kind of fear or survival mode, we don't tend to make very good decisions, quite literally, because the blood is draining out of our brain because we're going through an adrenaline response in our body. So processing emotions and understanding where they come from around pivoting or quitting or carrying on is an important first step. And then, you know, if actually you're not running away from something, if it's not a fear-based decision, once you've processed the emotions, you can look at, okay, rationally, what makes sense to do here? Does it make sense to pivot because actually our customers just don't want aren't picking up what we're putting down? You know, is it our messaging? What practically is going on here that we need to change? And then I'm just going to cover the last part, which is strategic quitting. Sometimes we have to quit what isn't working so we can find what is working. And I find when people are at that stage, they always know, and I mean like a full body know, K-N-O-W, not N-O. They always know at that stage when it's the right thing to do. And interestingly, I was having a client session the other day. He's been running his business for about 15 years now. It's about 10 million revenue a year. And he's having doubts. And anyway, we went through the coaching conversation. At the end, I asked him the question, what if you're just done with this business? And it was like, you could see at that point, he was like, I never asked myself that question, but I know it's like triggered a nerve here. So that's how I help people distinguish, and obviously help myself distinguish as well when I'm having doubts about something.
Wow, you said so many powerful things there. So I love the model of dealing with the emotions first and then dealing with the rationality. And it feels like the emotions are hard, right? So that it's because you can't be, almost by definition, you can't be rational with those. And I love your split between the fear emotions and the love emotions. I mean, as an entrepreneur, you can be afraid of making decisions. You can be afraid of calamity, but if you love what you're doing, you can be moving in a much more confident. Is it hard for you as a coach to kind of delve into the emotional side, or is it easier to kind of stay on the logical, rational side? And do your clients kind of accept that as a normal part of the process? You've got to deal with those emotions.
Well, I personally am a highly logical person. It's taken many, many years of work to develop my own emotional intelligence, my own emotional regulation. And I bring that into my work now because I know that it helps rational people to make, or highly logical people to make, better decisions. And I find that the way that it is framed helps people to understand that better. So the kind of clients I work with, I can't sort of go into the woo-woo realm of, you know, emotions, the law of attraction, all of that, although some people are more open to that. But what I can talk about is the science behind emotions and the effect that it has on the body, and help people to understand the link between the body and their emotions. For example, when our jaw is clenched, it's a sign that we're angry. When we've got stomach or gut upset, it's a sign that there's fear or anxiety present. So understanding that first enables us to use the rational part of the brain more powerfully than if we completely ignored the emotions. And I want to clarify here, this is not about, you know, because I've had some people say, well, I'm not an emotional person. Whether you're outwardly emotional or not, you have emotions that are going on internally that play into the decisions you make, how you act, how you show up. So everyone could be better served by understanding that a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I hear that, I hear myself say, oh yeah, I'm not that emotional. I make decisions rationally, but what I'm really saying is I'm very forgetful. And I don't remember all of those negative emotions that I've had in the past that have clouded my judgment, given me sleepless nights, created the anxiety, stopped me from making decisions, helped me procrastinate, all of those emotional decisions. I think that those, coming back to this idea of doubt, you know, the emotion of doubt, I think when I started this conversation, I was thinking about the logical side of doubt, right? I'm moving in this direction, and I don't know exactly what the outcome is going to be. There are lots of unknowns, lots of variables. I can do research. I can figure things out. I can think my way through the doubt. But I think what I hear you saying is that's part of it. But the other big part of it is you're going to have fear. You're going to have anxiety, love. You're going to have all these other emotional feelings that also could create doubt and make it hard to come to the right answer, the right decision to take that next step, right? Because what you're talking about is decisions to make. We decide every day, right? To keep going, to keep going or not keep going. So that's, you know, that's a very powerful, powerful concept. So I want to come back to something else that you said, though, that's very interesting to me. And that's the role of imposter syndrome. So you said that imposter syndrome is not always a bad thing. And tell me more about that. How does imposter syndrome, how can that play positively into this, this conversation about doubt and decision-making about where you want to go?
Okay, so I'm going to start a bit out there, right? If we look at the makeup of a psychopath, right? So a psychopath, one of their core traits is they lack empathy, right? They don't care about the consequences of their decisions, right? Which makes life a lot easier, let's face it. if you never felt sorry for anything that you did. So the mere fact that you are having imposter syndrome shows that you care about being competent, doing a good job, showing up, you know, in whatever capacity that looks like, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a leader, whether you're exec, whatever context it is. Now, that's, if you have that level of empathy, I think that's already a good thing. If you have imposter syndrome and you use it in a positive way, to come back to what I said earlier, you tend to ask yourself questions, right? So is what I'm feeling about myself actually what other people think? Or am I just sitting here telling myself stories? Which is a level of self-awareness that is developed if we use imposter syndrome as a positive thing, right? And then that person could potentially go out and ask five colleagues, for example, how do you see me? And then they will start to see, okay, well, there's actually this gap between how I see myself and how others see me. Or maybe it will alert them to a particular skill that they need to build up. As leaders, it's always important to keep on learning and to keep being curious. So imposter syndrome can perhaps encourage you to learn more and develop that curiosity. Where it can start to be a negative thing is if you go down a very heavy negative spiral, right? So you're literally constantly beating yourself up all the time, second guessing everything, questioning everything. That's when it starts to become very destructive and negative. The other way that it can come out in a negative capacity is where you act out against other people. So because you are feeling insecure, you try and take it out on other people, make them feel bad, etc. So if you are having these negative manifestations of imposter syndrome, then you know it's getting out of control. But if it is just something that comes up time to time that you use in a constructive fashion, it will help you grow.
It strikes me that that doubt and the imposter syndrome are related somehow, right? So you have doubts about your own ability, your own direction. I was thinking more of doubts about my own direction or decisions I'm making in the future. But imposter syndrome, it feels like that's doubts about yourself, right? Whether you have the capability, but you're framing it in a very positive, constructive way. Is it difficult when you're coaching people to get people to see the positive in imposter syndrome? And how do you kind of move people into that positive state to use it constructively?
So firstly, it's to help them understand, is it really negatively impacting their lives, right? Because, you know, coming back to emotions need the space to be acknowledged and worked through, right? So if, you know, they've got past the stage and it's sort of something that comes up from time to time, then it's about learning to, let's say turn to a toolbox of questions that they can ask themselves with curiosity, not judgment, again, designed to stimulate insights into action steps that they can take that will help pull them out of this imposter syndrome. And it may be something as simple as, oh, well, I've realized that actually I've made up all these stories about what other people are thinking about me, which are not true. I now understand that. And I understand that, you know, if this comes up again, I will question the validity of these stories that I'm telling myself about how I can't do something. Or, you know, in some cases, yes, they might need to go out and develop some kind of skill that they don't have now that will mean they won't feel negativity around this certain aspect anymore. But the point is, because you're continuously growing and expanding, if you're doing that, there will always be something that you won't be good at doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we're growing in life because of that. We've been talking a lot about, you know, doubt and about, you know, decisions about where we're going to go and maybe professional life and imposter syndrome, maybe doubt about ourselves in the context of work, in the context of maybe entrepreneurship or work. How do you see it being different in other spheres of a person's life, you know, in relationships, maybe with your significant other or partner? with you know, maybe goals in your life, with fun things you want to do, right? So are there doubts that kind of creep into those areas of our lives as well? Or is it, you know, is it different the way people deal with them in other spheres, or do people are consistent in the way they deal with them throughout their lives?
Well, there are some people that are very good at compartmentalizing different parts of their lives, but I believe how you do one thing is how you do everything, right? To a greater or a lesser extent. I'm not saying like you come home and pretend you're in a boardroom, but if we take the relationship context, we've been programmed through rom-coms and, you know, society to believe that you meet someone and life is a fairy tale, or it should be a fairy tale. And if it's not, something is lacking, and then hence the doubts come up. So in something as important as an intimate relationship, whether that's with a partner, whether that's with children, of course those same doubts come up. You know, is this the right person for me? Do they see me? Am I doing the right thing with my kids? Why are they acting out like this, etc., etc.? All the questions continue. And in the same way that in a work capacity you would look at yourself first, okay, well, how am I communicating? Am I being clear about what I want and need? Am I letting emotion get in the way? Am I acting out from a place of insecurity? Because sometimes, especially in a partnership, we're looking for the other person to validate us because we're insecure in some aspect. So these things in relation to imposter syndrome also very much apply in relationships as well. Hobbies, I'm not sure so much. Hopefully, if you have a hobby, you're not really obsessive about I don't know. But if you do something to a high standard, let's say you're a semi-professional athlete, again, the same doubts are likely to come up because you're constantly pushing the boundaries. And I think, you know, that's the key point here. Anything that consistently pushes boundaries is likely to bring up doubts.
Yeah. And relationships can often push your boundaries, and children and other things like that as well. So that's powerful. I want to talk about one other thing that you mentioned, because I think it's a powerful related idea, and that is your ability to deal with pain in your life. So it could be physical pain or emotional pain. How do you feel, and how have you seen in coaching people's ability to deal with pain is either helping them in deal with doubts and kind of move through some of these issues, or hindering them in being able to deal with those kinds of things?
So people will go to extraordinary lengths to avoid pain, which is why I said all that, the quote, which I believe came from the book, How to Not Give a Fuck, something okay. like that.
Which I've read, yes.
Okay, yeah. I think the quote comes from that book, which is why I said if you welcome in pain, you become unstoppable, because you're like, I'm not afraid of pain. Great, cool. I'm just going to keep going. When I say we go to immense lengths to avoid pain, I'm actually referring once again to the world of emotions as well, because people will sweep uncomfortable negative emotions under the carpet, and they will not go after things they want because they're afraid of negative emotions. So, you know, fear of failure, imposter syndrome, oh, they'll all think I'm an imposter, so I'm not going to do it at all, or people will judge me. Right. So people will stop themselves from doing things because they're anticipating negative emotions arising out of it. But actually, they're putting themselves in that state now. In terms of physical pain, well, as we know, a lot of people will push through that if they're going to run a marathon or do a triathlon. But, you know, that comes from a place of accepting the pain, nobody, well, I would hope nobody would think, well, I'm going to run a marathon, everything's going to be hunky-dory and wonderful all the time. I'm just going to be running along singing. I will very openly say I would not be prepared to put myself through the pain of doing a triathlon, for example. That's a choice I make. But, you know, if I welcomed physical pain, yeah, why not? Why wouldn't I do it?
And you kind of train yourself to get through that pain. And it strikes me that sometimes I have run marathons and half marathons, and sometimes that ability to deal with pain can be good, but it can also lead you toward injury if you're not doing it well. So it's important to make those choices as well. Well, Sarah, this has been a really powerful conversation. I learned so much about decision-making, dealing with doubts, the role of emotions versus logic and rationality, imposter syndrome, dealing with pain. Wow. How does anyone do this without a coach?
I've really enjoyed this conversation. It kind of went in interesting directions, I think. But yeah, I've really enjoyed this conversation. And yes, 100%, it is super valuable to have an objective third party that is trained in asking you these kind of questions that you need to be asking yourself if you want to consistently grow and consistently up level.
Yeah, it takes them. If you don't have that, you've got to be super disciplined about asking those questions to deal with, or having trusted relationships or friends to do that. But having a coach like you can be invaluable in kind of guiding you faster and more deliberately through that process. If someone wants to reach out to you to understand more about your services and how you work with folks, what's the best way to find you?
So I am very active on LinkedIn. I am Sarah Caroline Sabin on LinkedIn. That's Sarah without an H, which I think is more common in the US than the UK. And there is also my website, sarahsabin.com.
Great. Sarah, thank you very much for taking the time today.
Thank you very much for inviting me, David.